Okay. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program. I'm very excited to have you today. You're an entrepreneur, a comedic rock god, an inspirational speaker, and I'm very excited to have you here. We are friends and have had the opportunity to collaborate on a number of projects together, and I'm excited to talk to you a little bit more about your progression of your company and how you came to be where you're at today as the owner of Fungi Media, and especially how some of your more creative, fun, personal projects that are pretty wild have now started to like connect with your main business and how that works as well. So Elijah is here too. He's our co-host, producer, and editor for the podcast. I hope I did you justice in introducing you. How would you explain what you actually do?
Well, you left out lover of animals, but that's okay. We'll let that yeah, you did great. I think that that's a lot of stuff that I like to do. So you nailed it.
So you started Fungi Media a little bit before I started my own company. How did that come about?
How did I start Fungi?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was kind of a matter of time before I was going to start it. It was really a timing thing. So I was at an agency for about 15 years working as a creative director. And I ran a team of producers and animators and designers and people that made stuff. And I did that for a while, and the business sort of shifted from a marketing agency to a different type of company that sort of taught people a certain method. Like, my boss wrote a book and they were teaching a methodology, and we kind of shifted the business, and I sort of helped him build that business, market it, but the marketing agency part kind of went away. So I was spending less time helping people tell their stories and making stuff. And I was spending more time doing this other thing, which was cool. But I really saw myself more as a storyteller, maker of things, a filmmaker. So I wanted to create stuff. And so it was kind of one of those moments where I was like, I already know I want these things, and the timing seems right, and I know that I want to kind of own my own business. So now is a good time to do that.
Cool. So it was a pretty organic leap, or did you take some time to plan? You know, what did you put in place to be able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, luckily for me, I did, in terms of on the work side, the businessy side, I learned a lot from my mentor, who's my boss of like 15 years. I was somebody who was good at the creative stuff, but I didn't really know how to run a business. Certainly didn't know how to do any type of selling and some of these other things that you have to do as an entrepreneur. And so I learned that kind of going through and being under his mentorship. So I had that. And then on top of that, I think I also was a little bit of a good situation where that some of those clients from the earlier business weren't really clients anymore because we weren't doing the same things in that company. So when I left and started off, I kind of had some clients I could go out to and say, "Hey guys, I make stuff. Remember? We can make stuff together." And they were like, "Holy cow, that's awesome. We should do that." So I had a little bit of a runway in the sense of like, I had built up a network. Over the years, I had learned a lot about business, and that really did set me up in a way. And it was, you know, a lot of hard work to do all that stuff, but I think that was a big part of it. And then in terms of planning for the business itself, I guess I'm probably not always the best planner.
So sometimes it can work for you, right?
Well, it can work for you or against you. In this case, I think it worked well enough. I could have done with some more planning, but I just knew that, you know, I had sales at the end of the day, like having somebody that has a need and knowing that person is the best place to start. Because you'll figure out like the branding and all the other infrastructure. And at the end of the day, it was just me and to start with. So it's not like I had to have like a handbook,
right?
You know, for example. So I kind of just did a leap of faith thing, contacted some people and sort of said, the one plan I had was I need to make this amount of money to survive for a year.
Yeah.
And I was like, I kind of like did the math and I was like, okay, if I contact these 10 people and three of them need some help, then I'll survive this year. And that's kind of the plan I had.
That was, we had that discussion as well. When I was like trying to make the leap, you were like, well, what do you need to make? You know, like what is the number? And then I think one of the biggest things you said to me was, you know, it's a matter of marketing a little bit. You know, if you know you do a certain amount of marketing iterations, you'll be able to have some success in attaining client or attaining work, but you have to keep doing it so you can keep getting more and keep building that business. Mm-hmm. And that was like a really practical bridge that you gave me.
Right on. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
I think I blacked out when I told you that. I wasn't even.
I think I blacked out when I was saying it. Can you tell us a little bit about how you named the company? Because I think that's like a really cool story.
Yeah, definitely.
Fun Guy Media is the name of the company. And I wanted it to be something, I wanted the name to be something quirky, something that is indicative of my personality. And, you know, dad jokes are what I'm all about. And I had this name, and on one side it is kind of a dad joke, like we're fun guys and fun gals. But on the other side of there, it means like growth is sort of my number one value. Growth in your business, growth in your life, growth in whatever it is, your relationships. That's something I've learned about myself. And so this idea of, you know, and if you don't like the name, you know, give it a few months, it'll grow on you. I mean, I can't not tell it in a dad joke, but it does mean growth, right?
Yeah.
And so there was that part of it. And I really liked the idea of something just like really simple and kind of a little silly. And that just kind of came to me in a whim, and I kind of saw a little, the logo, and I liked, it just gave me a good feeling. And then what I did was I sort of had four other names that didn't really mean anything. It was like Carbonate Media. And like, they were like, sounded kind of cool, but it's like, you should name a business, you know, here's the, if I Google business names that are cool, right, maybe hipsterish,
what would Synergy, I? Synergy Films, right? That's sort of thing. Yeah. Like,
yeah. And so I had like three or four of those names in mind, but I was like, I don't really want to name it that. It doesn't really mean anything. But I was also really kind of nervous about like some of my clients being really corporate-y.
Yeah,
and
right.
Like, are they going to think this is weird and kind of cheesy and I don't want to be associated with it? What are they going to think? And I even put a survey out to some clients and to some other friends, and it was an anonymous thing, and Fun Guy came in like second to last. And the whole time I was just thinking to myself, I really want to name it that. I hope it wins. I was just looking for validation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then as I was getting off of the train one day, walking back to my home, getting off of the blue line L train, walking up the stairs, and I was thinking in my mind, I was like, should I just name it that? Like, I need to name something. Mm-hmm. I can't like stew on this anymore. And I'm walking up the stairs and I get on the escalator and I look down as I'm thinking about this, and literally the word FUNGI, Fun Guy, was spray painted on the step that I was standing on.
That's crazy.
I took a picture of it and you can see it on my website.
Yeah, I saw that there.
And I was like, I don't know what you believe in, if you believe in signs or whatever it is, but like, if that is a thing, then this seems like a sign. I don't know. It literally was a sign. Like somebody had spray painted a sign. And so I was like, and then I just incorporated that day. And then I was like, I'm done.
That's wild.
The name.
I mean, that's a, I think that is a sign. You imagine,
yeah,
like,
definitely.
Like the survey failed. And you're like, I still didn't throw it in the garbage. Like, I still want to use it. And then all the events, you have to be on that specific stair and that specific elevator at a specific time.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, that's pretty cool.
It was cool. And then, you know, it's just like some people kind of get it, some people don't, but the ones who do are often probably the ones you want to be.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a good way to filter who you want to work with.
Right.
It's also endearing. I mean, it's a little chuckle every time. Like, who doesn't want that to be synonymous with their business, right?
Yeah, totally. We're making stuff. It should be fun.
Matt, you're talking about growth earlier, and I was looking at your company page, and I noticed that your staff list is pretty large at this point, and I feel like having new team members is always like a good mark of company growth. So I was just wondering like what your process was for acquiring new members and kind of what the circumstances were that led you to feel like you needed someone at that point, or, you know, when those decisions were made.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think I'm a little bit of a newbie when it comes to growing a team mm-hmm. in terms of using my own money. I've done it using other people's money. It's so much easier. You're like, I need this person because I need it. And I know how much it takes to do all this stuff. And they're like, and then they sign the check and then it's okay. But this time around, it's your money. So it's way different. And I think as much as I put myself out there in the world and the entertainment stuff and the fun stuff, I'm pretty risk averse when it comes to investment and money. And so it takes me a long time to make those decisions. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's kind of who I am, the background of it. But in terms of making the decision, I knew that I knew that with the nature of my work, there are models that exist in the world already in terms of what does it take to operate this type of business. We're making videos and we're doing communications work and we're creating things. And there's no reason to like reinvent the wheel if the wheel works. And that is actually something I learned from my mentor. He's like, there's like flattery is the ultimate form of imitation is the ultimate form of flattery. So like, why create it from scratch? So I knew that I needed, for example, the next hire. I already knew who that was going to be. I knew I needed a production coordinator because the nature of the work is like lots of moving parts and lots of different people for crews, for sets and that sort of a thing. And I knew that that was a necessary role. And I knew that that wasn't something that I was going to be spending time doing. So it's easy when you can find a way to like identify the things that number one need to happen for the business to work. Number two are things you don't want to do or aren't good at. Because part of this, what I've learned is like, as an entrepreneur is the money and it working a certain way, following the book and moving making all the moving pieces work is one thing. But the other thing is, how do you feel? Like on a day-to-day basis, how do I want to feel? Why would I start a business to do something on my own terms to only feel like crap all the time?
Yeah.
And frustrated all the time. What would be the, why would you do that?
That's a big challenge a lot of people face. You know?
Yeah. They create this monster and then they feel like crap and they left because they were feeling like crap. So it's like, and so one of the most important things for me is like, removing some of the crappiness feeling of what, because at the end of the day, if you're going to run a business or work as a solopreneur or whatever that is, there's stuff there's crap you have to do.
Yeah.
But if you can identify some of the stuff that you're not good at, don't want to do, could find the right person for, then that's kind of where I started. And I knew one of the first roles was going to be that. I also knew that, that the accounting aspect of my business needed to be outsourced very quickly. Yeah. So I very quickly outsourced that, identified like a budget for that and how much needed to go towards that. So those were kind of steps one and two.
And do you feel bad about spending the money on that accountant?
I don't feel bad. I mean,
I don't either.
Yeah, I mean, I have, in total honesty, I have an accountant that does day-to-day accounting. I have a tax accountant who's a different person. than that, because they understand the tax code and understand how all that stuff works. And that, you know, I have, you know, four general meetings a year with that person, but then at the end it gets busy. At the end of the year it gets busy. Yeah. And then I have another person who's actually my dad, who is sort of my, like, you know, will work for beer CFO, in terms of I really wanted a line of sight to the books on a monthly basis, who could just, like, sit down with me and, like, does this all look right? And, like, it won't take long. We'll just look at it. So, so I have a couple different people involved, to make sure everything looks good. And I don't feel bad about that now.
Yeah. That's, I think so many of us creative types are good at creating. And then the more logical, I really hate doing my books. I really do, but I know how important it is, because I don't want to end up in jail.
Yeah.
Nobody don't want to go to jail. Money. Going to jail or running out of money are two pretty big things that get in the way of creating stuff. So is that, do you feel like that's your most important hire, or is there something that was, you know, more vital to kind of growing or expanding, or even just making your day to day more fun?
Well, you know, I think it's a learning process too. I think, you know, you have I had a model in mind. One of the things I did early on was I learned how to identify sort of a structure, like an organizational structure of what are the seats that you need. Forget about the people and who they are for a second, but you need a creative director, and you need an accountant, and you need a production coordinator, and then you need a client services person. And if you're a solopreneur, you are the person who's sitting in all five of those seats. Yeah. If you're in a company that has other people involved, then you might sit in three of those seats, and then you might have other people sitting in those seats. At the end of the day, you have to know what those seats are, and then you could fill them. Well, the last thing I was going to say about the team is there's lots of ways you can have a team. You don't have to have full-time hires and pay their taxes and that sort of a thing. In fact, some people don't even want to work on your team that way. You know, with Ross and I, we work together on teams, and it's a different type of a, you know, relationship, in the sense of, you know, how, you know, people get paid and that sort of a thing. But in terms of the value that it brings to, like, a client, for example, I know for a fact that I am not the best person probably for most jobs, and that the work is so much better with the right people and, like, the right kind of combination of skills, and on, you know, not only just skills, but, like, how you, like, do customer service or client service and that sort of a thing, and how you think strategically and bring that thinking to clients. So and for one thing for me that I identified early on, is I'm somebody who gets energy off of people and works with people better. Mm-hmm. And that might cost me more money, like, from a straight up business perspective, but it gives me more, it fills me up, you know? And so I knew that, okay, this is an important part of whenever the decision is, do you bring Ross in or not bring Ross in?
Right.
The answer always is bring Ross in. It's like, I don't even have to think about it, because I've identified my values. Mm. So it's not, I don't have to overthink it. It's just like, just spend more and feel better.
Yeah. And usually it's more successful, I hope.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the other part of it, right? Growth, right? So if growth is, for me, what does growth means? What does it mean? It means building a team of people, whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. and having more people involved and creating stuff with other people. So, like, bringing in more of the people that you want to work with, that's one thing. Certainly growing your business and within your clients doing amazing work, and they want you to come back. And so that relationship grows. So yeah, that all works under that value of growth.
And then you feel better most of the time. Right. Because you're like,
and that's,
you're
doing, yeah,
rad stuff with your friends. Right.
Yeah. Cause you're operating within your values of the things, you know, that make you feel good. And and that makes you feel better. Yeah. That's the,
yeah.
It's like, why are you doing anything? Because it feels good.
Yeah. Some of your personal projects you've really put, I guess, well, there's a weird way to rephrase that. COVID-19 has kind of changed a lot about how we operate in our industry. And I've actually noticed a lot more of your energy going towards some of your more creative projects and seeing that bleed over and overlap. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the mindless motivation stuff with Nate Katanis and even the Fungi Media broadcast stuff you're doing? Like, you've done some very cool stuff with guests on your live broadcasts and things that you weren't doing before.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, with the COVID thing, certainly my business, just like most businesses, have taken a major hit in terms of the amount of work we're doing. And just by the nature of, you know, not being able to get into the room with a crew and doing video shoots as one example, as being a big part of what we do. So we have a lot less client work to do, and that's hopefully getting back on track. But if certainly, I certainly wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to like kind of wait for that to happen to sort of get busy or get action. And so, you know, for me, I kind of leaned into some of the more personal, more fulfilling work. On one hand, it sometimes, I don't know, for me, I it's like I almost need like a way to justify it. If it's like somewhat loosely connected to the business, then I feel okay spending time on it. You know, it's like a weird mind trick that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So like, you know, yeah, exactly. So for Nate Katanis, who is a motivational speaker, or as I call him, a motivational speecher character, who is just like kind of a comedy outlet for me, because I spend a lot of time in sort of entertainment and music and comedy. And this is a character that for me has sort of came out of just a total fun, like no ideas of business or how it's going to be used to make money or anything like that. Just a fun thing to do. But by the nature of how my brain works, I start thinking about like, oh, this is people are reacting to it really, really well. And I should, you know, like offer it to people and as like comedy relief or comedy entertainment for a corporate event, for example, and sort of bundle that with some of the other things we're doing already for the event and start pitching it and sharing it with people. I mean, you never know until you start sort of suggesting
it. Yeah.
And so it kind of evolved into a thing that, number one, it's fun. That's the most important one. Right. So 50% of the reason is it's fun. 25% of the reason is it's a marketing thing that actually makes Fungi and myself more visible to clients or to people, even production people that might want to work with us. And then the other 25%, I think if I did the math right, is it could be its own service that people could actually buy, or a product that could be people actually buy. So from the marketing standpoint, after we made this series of videos that were just comedy sketch videos that were just a fun thing to do, I was in a Starbucks and I was across the street from one of my biggest clients, and the chief marketing officer came walking in. And I'm like, I don't even know if this guy remembers. Like, we've worked together, but it's like he's seen a million of people like me.
Yeah.
A day. He walks in and kind of like says hi, but I'm waiting in the line, and he goes to the quick pickup because he's
a guy on time.
And as he walks out, he mumbles something to me and then walks through, and I didn't understand what he said. I was like, well, I think he remembers me. And then that same day, I got a message from him on LinkedIn that said, "Hey, Matt." I'm like, well, he knows my name.
What?
I got something funny to share. I don't know if you heard me, but I actually called you Nate today. And I was like, number one, the guy remembers me. Number two, the guy watches Nate Katanis videos.
Right.
I haven't even talked to him in 6 months.
But he's entertained.
But he's being entertained, or, you know, so from a marketing aspect, he's top of mind, right? Like he's thinking about fun guy, or he thinks about like these guys do funny, fun stuff. And then from a product aspect, for the first time this year, we were in Cancun, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
We got hired by a conference to do video for the conference and to promote the conference, but also to basically make it more fun. Nate Katanis did three different keynotes speeches.
Wow.
and opened up, sorry, not keynotes, but presentations. One of them was opening for a keynote, just to get people like out of their seat, think differently. Let's have fun. This is a fun event. And then, and so that was part of a product that we offered, right? So, so that's kind of how those things kind of start to happen together, kind of go, but I don't really know that until I start playing in the sandbox.
Which is kind of the great part about that. Like I played a small role in that when you called me and you're like, hey, I have an idea for this guy. Do you want to do a little photo shoot? And like, I've never been more proud when you were like booked as Nate and as a video production company for that conference. I was like, wow, we planned that scene. You know, just being goofy in my little apartment. You built in this video thing on top of that becomes larger than life. And then now it's like a real product, you know.
I mean, that was probably the best. I can't think of a better, I mean, just to sound like a businessy person again.
Yeah.
A better return on investment than that time that I spent with you, Ross, taking those photos. It completely legitimized this not very legitimate thing, because they're super professional photos. They're super polished. They're like photos that, you know, like real influencers or thought leaders, get. Mm-hmm. They totally helped. Yeah, they helped. It totally shaped and defined the brand in terms of what does this character look like. And so we post these photos on Instagram and on social media and all this kind of stuff. And I still use them. Today I posted one 2 days ago, and it was like we did this awesome. 2 years ago, you know. So talk like anybody watching this who's considering a photo shoot with Ross Floyd, you might I would say do it. You will get something that you use for a very long time.
Well and actually that's not to toot my own horn, but I guess I will. That photo shoot kind of helped craft a little bit more of a product for me working with my clients. Where we, the cool part about that is after the photo shoot, you had a lot of alchemy where you added your branding and a little bit of secret sauce with some of the copy and stuff you added the images. But I've used the model for that photo shoot for other clients where they really need a library of content that they can use for other marketing purposes and use and use and use and reassemble and mix around and use that again. So giving the most value to my clients through a similar model that we use.
Yeah.
And it was just some goofy thing. And I was like, this could work for.
And you didn't know until you did it, right? You know, you didn't know until you did it. You started using it and you have a hunch. You don't know things. I mean, I don't know things.
You know, we just did it when it sounded fun. And that was like, you know, let's do some fun.
Oh, yeah. That seems to be like a theme that I keep noticing is that time management, especially just working with Ross for these few weeks so far, is just he's always finding these little ways to like make his time a little bit more efficient. So I'm just curious, like, what is your daily routine? How do you kind of balance like your life? Because it seems like you obviously like to have a lot of fun and incorporate that to your work, but how do you kind of balance like your work life with your personal life? And how do you, as an entrepreneur who's working for yourself, you know, you're kind of responsible for that whole thing. So,
yeah. Well, I think if there is anybody watching or listening to this that is on the younger side, I'm 38, Jesus. Mm-hmm. 38 this year. And I don't know everything. I know I have a lot to learn. I have a whole life ahead of me and learn about myself. I think for younger people who are sort of kind of playing with that question or trying to figure it out, like you don't know because you really haven't done much, like only because you haven't been on the earth for very long. Mm-hmm. And like at 25, I didn't know, you know, it's like you learn like from like the years of 20 to 25 are like small incremental learning. And then 25 to 27 is like even way faster learning. And then 27 to 30 is like even more. And like, it just, every year it kind of doubles, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I think every young person needs to be super comfortable with like not knowing the right formula and like feeling lost. Like you should lean into the feeling of being lost. And the reason why I say that is because I'm still learning, like, how do I manage my day? And like, how should I spend my time? And who am I as a human? But I think what I've learned as I've gone along and tried things and spent a couple more years on the planet, I start to get to know myself a little bit more. I start to kind of ask some of those questions about like, who am I? And like, what do I value? Because when you start to get a little bit closer to that answer, and you don't know until you go through life experience, then you start to get a little clearer on how should you spend your time.
Right.
Because the time, because there's, you can always make more money. You'll never get back time.
Right. Right.
And so that's the most precious commodity on the earth. And how you spend it is your decision. And what I've sort of gotten a little bit clearer on is like my values in terms of what do I value? And so that'll help determine how do I spend my time. And now I'm finally getting to your question, which is how do you spend your time like in a given day or maintain your day? Well, one of my biggest values is that, that with my business comes second and my life comes first, or my relationships or the, like my own creativity, and Matt comes first, Fungi comes second.
Right. That's great.
And so I intentionally start my day by waking up and going to the gym at 6 a.m. every morning. And then as I've been in a relationship now with my girlfriend and we've gotten closer, especially COVID has like brought, like ramped that up. We spend time together, like cooking breakfast together. And that's and we go to the gym together too. So we kind of have this time together. But the point is that I make the morning about myself. And so make the first thing that I do in the morning, make it sure it's for me and not for Fungi.
Right.
And that's a very symbolic thing for me, but it's also, I'm more of a morning person too. So I've kind of learned, I like the mornings and stuff.
Right.
So I, you know, I kind of prioritize it that way. And so, okay, I do that every day. And then I live by my calendar when we get into like work mode. So I have since I have a little bit of a team, I have a priorities call at 9 a.m. every day. And that happens every single time without fail, 9 to 9:15. And then after
I'm taking down notes, by the way.
Oh yeah, sure. And because it's important for me to, I think of my team as they need to be empowered to do this work and to do their work. And it might take a little longer to do that, but you know, there's reasons why I do that. And then I have probably scheduled out chunks of time of some of the things that I have to do to work in the business. For example, I edit videos, right? Mm-hmm. So I have probably an editing chunk every day. I spend, you know, probably an hour or more on new business development every single day. And that could come in the form of a client call or prospecting or something like that. And then I have sort of the other things that I have to do on a daily basis, and I kind of schedule those out. But I have it on my whole calendar. If you look at it, there's only probably about a half an hour not accounted for.
Wow.
And that's for lunch and to walk down the street, because if I don't walk, I lose my mind and forget to leave the house. So that works for me. That just works for me, you know.
But is that something that's new that you've kind of developed over your career? Is that something that you've kind of stuck with since you were younger?
Well, it's certainly not something I stuck with as I was younger. I mean, what I've learned is that because I'm not, like, I am a very fly by the seat of your pants, like before I started working as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. you know, I could like go into a project head down and for like 3 days and then like come up for air and be like, what day is it? Yeah. That's the opposite of what I just described.
Yeah.
But what I've learned is I need tools that to supplement what I'm not good at. And if I schedule, and I also need to make less decisions and use less energy power. Mm-hmm. So if I spend every day making decisions on what I should do in that hour, or what should I do at 3 o'clock today? Then I'm spending brain power, which is very precious, on that instead of
right.
doing like something like writing a creative proposal or like thinking about my business or whatever. So I learned that along the way. I didn't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. Nobody told me that really. People do different things. The one thing I did learn was to spend some amount of time in the morning. This is somebody from Microsoft told me that I like really stuck with me. This like C-level dude who's like a mindful guy and mindful mm-hmm. guru guy. He's like, I spend a half an hour every morning before the day starts thinking about my intentions for the day. Like, what are like the three things that have to happen today to move the business forward?
Mm-hmm. Or this amazing. Week. Yeah.
And if you do that, all of a sudden, all those little, think about them like in like, as in like stones or rocks, pebbles and sand, right? If the sand is all the like little thing, like, oh, like the more tactical things, like I've got to, copy this footage over and I've got to right. email this person, or those are important things, but they might not be the number one priority thing, right? Whereas like this week I have to, absolutely, like lock in a studio for right. next week's shoot. Maybe that's a thing, or I have to make this creative proposal for a client. If you put all the sand in the jar first, you have no room for the big things.
Yeah.
So I put the big things in first and then I fill in the sand. And if I don't have enough room, I'll put the sand in next week, you know? So those are just some like things that I gleaned from other people mm-hmm. in terms of yeah. less about tactically, how do I schedule my time, and more about like, how do I think about being intentional?
Right.
And there's some tools about like priorities and putting myself first. And some of those types of things are what I learned from kind of like a way of thinking or a mindset from some other people.
Yeah. It's interesting how that becomes more tied to your values, right? You know, if yeah. you organize your time better to advance your main mission, the priorities become pretty clear. And actually, it's funny, you're saying all that stuff. I just recently started to realize, even just having, you know, Elijah on board, like having, we have a project management tool we started using called Asana. And like,
yeah, it's great.
When I'm good about it, we get a lot more done. When I'm good about putting our deadlines in and things like that, when or not, you know, he and I talked for like half an hour about, you know, some funny thing we saw online, which is also fun and important, but like, not advancing maybe the mission of the company per se.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So yeah, it's really good when I am the same. I was not an organized person growing up. I just liked freedom to be an artist and do
yeah. whatever.
It's interesting finding more freedom in organization than
yeah, that's interesting.
Right. I especially often, as you get older and you fill your life up with more stuff, you just don't have the luxury. Cause I mean, you've created all this for yourself, you know, like,
right.
but whatever. And if you want it, you want all that stuff to do all that stuff and that busy work, then yeah, it's like, you don't have the luxury of all that, the extra time to let it slide into the next day
or yeah.
right.
the next day. It's just, you kind of have to have some tools.
Do you feel like when you do that, it's easier to walk away at the end of the day as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I still struggle. I mean, I maybe I always will with walking away at the end of the day. I think boundaries are really tough for people, and they're really tough for me, especially with the COVID stuff and working from home and like kind of the worlds of work and personal life blending more. Mm-hmm. That's been a harder thing for me to say, boom, I'm done for the day. Not even have to think about it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and the boundary of like, I'm not going to respond to these emails until tomorrow at, you know, 9 a.m. or whatever. But I think it's just it's one of my personality challenges that I have to continuously work on and get better at. Cause you know, when the boundaries all get erased, especially in a weird pandemic like this, for people like me who struggle with those, it takes a lot of extra work to try to put them back in place.
Yeah. It's a little easier when you have fun stuff scheduled after work.
Yeah.
We're not really doing anything right now.
Maybe that's a good tactic. Always schedule something fun at like 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta do it. Or have a little puppy that like barks when
that's a tool. Yeah.
My dog's a tool. That's kind of mean when you say that loud. That's all really good to know. We can edit this part out too, because I'm rambling. This is kind of a good one. Do you have like an I've made it moment yet where you're like, I'm doing it. This is great. You know, this is my number one achievement. I've killed it. Maybe I'm done. Maybe I just hang up my hat and I retire.
Do I have an I've made it moment? I would say I probably had little ones that were like less I've made it, more like this is, I want to do more of this. Mm-hmm. I think that that's another thing that I am not great at. Like, I think I typically am like, God, okay, we did that thing. Great. On to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that especially if you're working with other people and culture and a team, I think that's not a great way to go about things. I think celebrating those things is really important. And so I think I fall into the trap of like, move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And I certainly have had career highlights and you know, where you win that first client, you know, as in your business, or we completed this really big, huge project and like the client was super pumped and like, you know, it worked. All the things he did worked.
That's nice.
You know, where you're like, oh, I guess I'm now entrepreneuring.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I've made it doing that. Like I'm doing that, right? Like you know, some people say like you can get through 2 years, you're probably going to be able to get through 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and stuff like that. So there's never been a moment where I'm like, I've made it, you know, I'm now like achieved what I want to achieve, because I think it becomes the next thing. Like,
right.
And that's why I like, think high achievers, people who are really successful, like business or whatever they're doing, their art or whatever, they keep going. It's like, they have an appetite that it just doesn't really ever seem to quite get filled, you know.
I think maybe you shared that analogy with me, the stair step analogy, or maybe it just came up in our discussions where like as you progress in your business, you're kind of leading to the next stair, you know. It's not like, you know, you get that first client, you move up, you get the next client, or you like the idea that you had an idea, you sold it to someone, you executed on it, and you did really well, it was well received, and you get to do more. Like that's another stair step progression thing.
Totally. I think it's the that's a great analogy, is there. Yeah, it's like, and then I don't know if the stairs ever, I don't think there's a top to the stairs. Keep going.
You might jump off at some point.
Yeah, right? You might. I mean, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me it's going through, like, you know, getting out in the world, putting yourself out there, trying things, like pitching a project or like trying to get a job somewhere or making something you've never made before, you know, doing all these life experiences, that's what leads to learning, at least for me.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things I don't think I expected is I thought like, well, I now figured out like what I want in the world by, you know, 30 or something. And what I've learned is that that learning never stops, and that like I'm asking those questions more than ever. Like, am I doing what I really feel in my, is in my guts that makes like lights me up and makes me feel alive? Or am I doing like, what am I thinking right now? Like about what I should be doing. And I think like, I should have 100 clients, not 5, because why? Like,
right.
Because somebody else has that, you know? Or I should be like a billionaire by now. And if you just like spend much time on social media, you'll feel real bad about yourself. Like, because I could you can compare yourself to, I mean, if you're the type of person who does this, and I am, which is a really not a good thing to do, but it's almost impossible not to. Like, you're surrounded by like people giving you advice about how you should live your life all the time, or showing you how their life is awesome. And you're like, oh yeah, like Gary Vaynerchuk is like, makes this much money and he's doing all this stuff. Like, I'm going to compare myself to that.
Yeah.
And like,
right.
Think I should do that also for some reason, just because I should, you know, and it doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is a conversation I'm having with myself, right? But what I'm learning all the time is learning more about myself, you know, and like, and how to not do what I should be doing and to do more of what feels good and what feels good, like we were talking about before.
Yeah. That's,
sometimes that means less, making less money.
Yeah.
But you know, I think sometimes it leads into making more money.
Oh yeah. Well, I think if you can kind of figure the ends of it out, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that as you learn more about yourself, I think it's less about like making the quick buck and more about like kind of drilling into your foundation and really kind of always being, try to clear on your values. And I think that the money will follow that if you really are somebody who wants to, you know, be a entrepreneur, if that's part of it for you, you'll start to get clear on your passions and your strengths and how they help people. And people will want that. And you'll find out, at least for me, I'm finding out that not everybody wants it.
Right.
Some people really want it.
Yeah.
And if you can find those people, then you're figuring some stuff out.
Yeah. I have experienced the same recently, and some of it's from modeling you, where you're really good at developing those relationships long-term, you know, and your growth model is repeats over and over again. And that's something I wanted by watching what you're doing, where I have the power to impact the course of a company and change a lot more. If I can build a stronger relationship with the companies that I'm working with.
Right.
But that takes, the other half of that is having a company that's like interested in buying what you specifically are selling, you know, your quirkiness or your passion for a particular topic or something, where you understand them in a way and they come to you and really want you specifically to work on their project, not just some guy with a camera or anyone that'll do, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Being more than a commodity is kind of the most important thing to me moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes a lot of, I mean, some people are a little bit more gifted at going through that exercise and understanding themselves. I'm not gifted at that. Like, it's something takes a lot of questioning and trying and hitting a wall and being okay with like failing and not knowing things.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you fail and your invoice still goes through and you get checked.
Well, yeah.
You do well for that project. So if they're like, see it and never again.
Yeah.
You
know,
but yeah, that's very cool.
Well, and it doesn't always have to be failing with a client necessarily, right? If you work hard and you have good intentions and you show up and you do the thing they hired you to do, I think probably more times out of 9 times out of 10, you'll probably do the work and get it done. I think some of the failure is more about like you know, saying yes to the wrong thing, or building a business that doesn't serve you.
Yeah.
You know, super successful people in the sense of money, it's tons of unhappy.
Yeah. Tons seriously. Of yeah.
And that is not what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
What do you feel is maybe the key to doing that? We probably talked about it earlier, alluded to it, but what do you think is key to, I guess what we're really talking about is like fulfillment in your path.
Yeah. Sorry, Ross. So what's the key to fulfillment? Is that what you're saying? What's the key to the world and dreams?
Please
making
them tell me, you know, like,
this sounds like a question for Nate.
Meaning of life. Yeah. Work your hustle muscle. Tell me what to do so I can, you know, win over everyone.
I think, obviously, like, I'm not going to have the answer for other people. I think what can sometimes be helpful is to, you know, hear what other people are doing and also kind of more like just see that other people are struggling with the same questions as you are, right? Like, that's the reason why I created Nate Katanis, was there's just all this unsolicited advice in the world that is total bullshit. Like, at the end of the day, I even think Gary Vaynerchuk is totally full of shit. Like, I think what he says is like true. Sure. And I think he believes and he has good intentions.
Yeah.
But I think what he's modeling for the world is actually like, it's ironic because he's pitching, like, I don't know if you guys know, I think Ross, you do. I don't know, Elijah.
Yeah, I do.
He's famous, famous entrepreneur, famous motivational speaker. Super fame, has a huge media company. Just like went public with his wine company and sold it for like tons and tons and tons of money. Is always talks about one day he's going to buy the Jets. But I follow him. Like, I get motivated by some of the things he says and that sort of thing. But he's always like making content of like him sort of motivating younger people and like don't like be happy with what you've got and like stop comparing yourself to other people and you know, work hard and that's it. Like, you can't just expect it. But like, a lot of what he's saying right now is about like, be compassionate, like just know that like nobody's got it figured out and you just have to try and like, you know. But the ironic thing is, I think he's fueling everybody's questioning about who they are as people. Like, he's creating this model of like, be more like me by just showing it. Here's all the stuff you don't have. And then kids who aren't equipped to quite yet navigate those feelings yet, like the desire to do more and
right, how,
like a mindset, they don't have that yet. They see that and then they feel like shit and then they go to him and he gives them advice. It's like it's a weird cyclical effed up thing. So going back to the question of like, what's the key to fulfillment? I think it's knowing yourself, man. I think that that's what it comes down to. And it's a lifelong journey. Like, I think the more you dig into that question, it just is that like rope that just keeps on going forever. But I think the more that you kind of dig into it, the closer to fulfillment you get, you know. Not happiness, it's very different than fulfillment, right? But you know, feeling alive, right? And kind of making this helps you make decisions on how you want to spend your time, because it goes back to the time thing is the only thing you have, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes knowing yourself is just knowing when you're uncomfortable, so you have to move in another direction, right? That's how I think that was the tip of the iceberg for me. And then it led to more of the questions that you're examining now, you know?
Well, and even to that point, Ross, listening to that, those feelings and not listening to what your parents are telling you you're supposed to do. Here's what other people are, you know, like modeling yourself off of other people and how they're living their lives. And that, you know, I think to your point, Ross, it's like, yeah, you have a feeling like, what is that? What that means something that's real. That's the real thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where all that the pain keeps people from feeling good things. You know, like, oh, I hate this job, but I'm going to stay in it for a while. Or
yeah, because I should. Why? Because if I don't, then something bad's going to happen. Because I've other people said that.
Right. What if something really good happens? What if you're successful?
Yeah.
What if you make it past that 2 years doing some silly stuff and having a good time?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's like the best part of what we do. I have this crazy plan. It might not work. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you did, right?
Yeah, I didn't do it on my own, but I, you know, I did it with the community. I did it with you and Mike Murray, and I did it with a bunch of other allies that are kind of trying to do the same thing. And, you know, like being a photographer in 2017 or whenever I decided to do that, like there's a lot of photographers around, right? It's not like exactly a not saturated market. Everyone's got a camera on their phone, so it's, you know, it kind of defies logic to want to go do that. But when you become what you're talking about and you figure out how to do something that's more in line with your values, like a photography is just a product, a part of what I do. It's just a mechanism for me to serve in the way that I like to serve. So like figuring that out is very cool. And it did work out when I started to get more in tune with the businesses I like to help, you know, the stories I like to tell. That also is fulfilling, but also is like, puts me in a different realm, a different category. I'm not just a guy with a camera, which is the greatest fear, right? You become more than that. And not to sound egotistic, it becomes a small part of your larger vision for your life and self, where you can, I get to hang out with cool people like you and talk for an hour about how our, you know, our smaller passions and desires get us to companies that allow us to explore that even more. And, you know, we have setbacks, we have other mistakes or things like that, but we're growing and changing and learning ourselves more. I think that's a pretty fun way to live.
I dig it. You know, it's like the it's like focusing on the process, right?
Yeah.
Over the product.
Yeah, enjoying the moment and being grateful that, hey, I get to get up today and photograph Matt. Or even if it's we're working on some of our more businessy stuff, we're like, hey, I'm gonna go today and photograph this floor sealant.
Like, yeah, never thought you'd say that.
It's
literally like watching paint dry.
Well, but then you find the challenge there is to find the interesting story in that, and it's there. But you have to look past what everyone else looks past and kind of get into it in a weird, nerdy way. But the person you're working for is into that passionately. That's what they do every day, right? So that's their, like, journey.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, witness that. You're like, oh, you're really into this. This is cool.
Wow.
Wow.
Kind of weird.
And it can't be just money.
Right.
So cool. Well, it's been really great. Really enjoyed our conversation as always. You know, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, it was great meeting you, Matt.
Yeah, guys, this is awesome. I really appreciate the time, and I love these conversations. So excited to see the final product.
This podcast is sponsored by Clever Editing. The difference between good content and great content is just a little clever editing. Get a quote today at www.cleverediting.com.